Welcome back to The Lars Resort, still a podcast with me, Lars Severson, still brought to you by Betson. And can I just say, first of all, as we hurtle towards the end of the group stage, I want to take a moment to just thank you all for listening. When we first started talking about doing a daily pod during the Euros, and by we, I mean myself and our friends at Betson, I gotta say, my first thought was that surely there would not be a market for this. There should be too much content. There's too much Severson. It's why I've been obsessed with trying to keep the running time down and mostly failing to do so. There's just so much football to watch. There's so much good content being produced in terms of podcasts and written articles and like stuff you can spend your time on. So, really, I honestly didn't think you guys would find the time, and I expected there to be a pretty huge drop-off in our numbers, and that kind of hasn't happened. Numbers are good. So by and large, you guys are sticking with it, all these episodes, and the fact that out of all the football content that you could choose to spend your time on this summer, the fact you're spending this much time with me here at the Lars Resort, I am genuinely, genuinely touched by that. It's honestly a welcome and unexpected thing, so thank you very much for that. It was another two-screen evening, but just the two games, not the four that we're going to have the next two nights. That's going to be a lot, but we had... And I say it was just the two games. I mean, really, it was just the one game tonight, wasn't there? I mean, I did theoretically watch both, but we'll get to that. But it was all about Croatia-Italy this evening. Sort of early news with the team news. We saw that there would be a tactical switch from Italy. We talked about this before the tournament a little bit, that he had, by him, I mean Spalletti, had played three at the back in, I think, three out of four friendlies in 2024 or something like that. And it does kind of make more sense with the composition of the squad as he has it, I think. Not a ton of wingers there, and, you know, it makes sense to go wing back maybe. But the game kicked off, and it was low quality stuff, I thought, in the first half. Not a lot happened. Again, I feel Croatia are kind of looking a little bit one-paced, a little bit predictable. But because I'm not like an in-depth tactical analyst, I struggle to kind of define exactly why they look one-paced and predictable. So over to Carlin Carpenter, who does analysis for the Houston Dynamo over in MLS and has been a good and interesting follow on Twitter for years. He wrote in the first half that lack of runners and depth in behind slash through Italy's 5-3-2 a real problem for Croatia to create anything tangible in the final third. Centre-backs can be aggressive to step when Kramaric tries to connect play. Centre midfielders can jump higher and leave centre-backs free to cover, etc. Everything is in front of them. And then that is the point, because there's no one in the Croatia team, as it was set up in the first half, who will actually make a run into space in behind the Italian defence. The Italian defence can just step up. You know, the centre-halves can leave the confines of the back three and engage high up the field. You know, Kramaric playing up front is like he is more of a second striker or someone who comes in from the flank. He isn't going to play on the shoulder of the defender. And when no one does that, you're not able to sort of stretch the play and you become very predictable and easy to deal with. A lot of technical players who want the ball at their feet in the Croatian team, no one really making runs off the ball. That gives Italy a problem behind them. And it made it easier for Italy to kind of control the game. But then on the other hand, Croatia are experienced, they're disciplined, they don't give you much either. So Italy weren't creating a ton, and it just was a pretty miserable game. It did occur to me again, looking at Croatia, that there are like a bunch of players that would immediately improve the England midfield. Like all three, the Brozovic, Kovacic and Modric, like all of those, if you play them next, one of them next to Declan Rice, England would immediately look much better. If it was Modric, okay, maybe some defensive covering personnel might be required. But you see my point, like a guy who knits the things together in the way all of those three can do. England doesn't have one. It's remarkable. Anyway, stop talking about England already. I'm trying to avoid that. Anyway, it was pretty dire in the first half and not a whole lot better in the second, I didn't think. And Croatia got one of those annoying handball penalties. There's been a little bit more ref chat than I typically like the last couple of episodes. I just want to flag up with that, because that's not a specific decision thing or a ref thing. It's just like a rules thing. I don't think it's logical that what happened there is penalized by an 80% chance of a goal to the other team. It isn't rational. It doesn't make sense in a low-scoring game for something pretty random and inconsequential in the box to result in that big a goal-scoring chance. It's not a rational consequence. It's not a rational sanction. So I honestly think, if we have to have... I mean, maybe they should be fouls when the arms are up and out and all that. Can it not be an indirect free kick? How about this? All handballs in the box... that are neither clearly on purpose that stops a goal scoring opportunity. If it's clearly on purpose or it stops a goal scoring opportunity, a clear goal scoring opportunity, then it's a penalty. But if it's just this random bullshit that doesn't obviously affect anything, let's not give the other team a goal essentially for it. Let's make it an indirect free kick. Now, as it happens, maybe Luka Modric also believes in this because he did not score his penalty. 80%, not 100%. Luka Modric missed the penalty, but Croatia just momentarily looked ginned up. They were acting with some sense of urgency, unusually for them, and managed to get a goal with, ironically, Luka Modric very soon after that missed penalty. And if you look at that goal, Modric appreciation alert. Obviously, this is a Luka Modric friendly podcast. He was very, very alert to get to that rebound, and it makes him the oldest goal scorer at the Euros, but if you watch the replay, he doesn't move like a 39-year-old there. I wonder about the secret fitness plans of Luka Modric. Is he one of those who does a ton of yoga or something? That would make sense. But he's a very sprightly 39-year-old. But the game just kind of continued to happen. Clearly now Italy were in trouble, and you were expecting some kind of response from Italy. They're staring elimination in the face. And they just kind of continued to not do anything. They were really bad. I noted down, 86th minute, Italy's first properly well-worked chance of the game? Question mark. This is a really nicely worked attack that Scamacca was too slow to pounce on. Yeah, Scamacca came on, having been dropped from Retegui. He was brought on. And the sort of double threat of Scamacca and Retegui is just, again, looked not very impactful up front. This is not a forward line that's going to intimidate many opponents in this tournament. Again, I write in the 89th minute, as it looks like Italy are heading out, that Italy just never got going, question mark? I posted a meme of a stick figure prodding Italy, come on, do something, Italy. And then, of course, 90 plus 8 minute, just the most Italy thing that could possibly happen. And I think we need to take a moment of appreciation here. Italy are just fully, fully dedicated to not doing more than they have to. And I can appreciate that. I'm quite a lazy person, physically. I have a deep and profound instinct to not move more than I have to. It's like in very basic things in everyday life, if you've brought some things out from the kitchen and you have to put them back, I'll save up. I'll wait until there's loads of things that need to go back into the kitchen, and I'll take all of them at the same time so I don't have to walk back and forth to the kitchen so many times. All these sort of basic nonsensical sort of small daily life things you can do to conserve energy and move a little bit less, I'm really good at doing them without even thinking about it. I just instinctively do them. Even when I play golf now, one of the issues with my swing is that I occasionally use my arms too much and don't rotate my torso properly because, again, I'm lazy. And maybe this is why I put on so much weight in my 30s. But the point being, from that perspective, as someone who has a lazy instinct, I can only salute what Italy have done here. Why should they go out and play well and do worthwhile things on the pitch for any of the first 97 minutes when they can just score one goal in the 98th? And go through. I mean, it's obvious. It's very energy efficient. It's a very green team, isn't it? It's energy efficiency. They're not wasting any efforts or making any efforts. They're just kind of, you just wait for the perfect time or the last possible moment, which is also something from my professional career I've been known to occasionally do. Italy, I salute you. On the actual goal, remember we had Tor Christian Carlsen on to talk about transfers, and he talked about Calafiori. And suggested sending him to Man United, and his big point that he made about Calafiori is that he's a huge character, big personality, strong character. I guess this was the kind of thing we were talking about. In the last minute of all the last minutes, he just kind of from the back strode forward, ran through everyone. Great stuff, and a lovely finish by Sakagni, of course. But I gotta say, as much as I enjoyed that Calafiori run, someone's got to foul him, surely. I was just thinking, aren't someone going to kick this man? I feel pretty confident that if this had been completely opposite, if this had been the other way, and Gvardiol or someone had been striding forward in that circumstance as Calafiori did, I reckon one of the Italians would have flattened him. One of them would have just taken one for the team, just two-footed the guy, just stopped him, even if it takes a red, because that's qualification on the line right there. But nobody did. And the big question, I thought, ahead of this game was neither of these teams had played particularly well in the tournament or played anywhere near what we think is their potential based on the players they have. Which one of them will rise up and finally do it? And after 98 minutes, my conclusion is, well, none of them, really. I don't think any of them really did show an awful lot more than, Italy survive Obviously, they get through, but you wouldn't look at this Italy performance and say, whoa, they're going to go far in the tournament. But of course, they're playing Switzerland next. And that's just the thing. I think Switzerland have looked better than Italy in their games so far. But Italy being Italy, and Switzerland, you know, being kind of fine, but not that much more than that. I mean, for me, this has got Italy on penalties written all over it, doesn't it? I can just imagine Italy sliding into the quarterfinals here without having played a single good game. Not really. Italy, is this Shaqiri? Is this like a failed Shaqiri Panenka or something is what this is going to come down to? I can absolutely see that. The other game, I mean, I did theoretically watch it, in so much as it was on a screen that was positioned in front of me, which I can still say that I watched every game at the tournament, but I think this is as close as I've come to really not watching something. It was there, I cast a few glances over on it, but really, with Spain making 10 changes, and like they were just still a little bit too good to mess this up. They were in control most of the game. But at the same time, Albania were not bad enough for Spain B to run up a big score number and really let loose here. I think Albania can really hold their heads up high. In a different group, I really think they could have done something in this tournament, but, you know, the football gods giveth, and in this case, they took it away with the draw. But yeah, Spain got the job done with a minimum of fuss. I don't know if you've seen the story. This tickled me. According to Bild, the German tabloid, Spain might get fined by the German labor authorities because Lamine Yamal, he's too young. Under German law, it is apparently forbidden for under-18s to work after a certain point in the evening, which is normally 8 p.m. For athletes, they can get an exemption up to 11 p.m. But the game kicked off at 9 local time. Lamine Yamal came on. He has to go shower now. Maybe he has some media duties. Maybe he gets selected for a drug test. I mean, he definitely worked past 11 p.m. This evening, and that is against the German law. You would think the German prosecutors would just kind of chill out and let it go, but that isn't also what German prosecutors are famous for, I don't think. So we'll see if Spain get fined. I mean, that would be very funny. Anyway, I'm just not, again, dedicated to not wasting any of your time during a busy tournament. I don't think we need to talk about Spain, Albania much. And tomorrow, I'm going to segue into, like, talking about tomorrow a little bit, because tomorrow, it's England, isn't it? It's England. It's also France-Poland and the very, very interesting Austria-Netherlands game that I'm very, very keen on. So that I'd like to see. Again, Austria, at their best, has played some of the best football I've seen in the tournament, but they also clearly can't do that for a full 90-minute. Like, they maintain the intensity. Netherlands, I was quietly impressed with them against France. I mean, they dealt better with being put under pressure. A team that, as I've complained before, the midfield in particular doesn't have a ton of defensive fibers in them. I thought they dealt really well with that situation. And unfortunately, as I've flagged up Austria as an underdog, I can absolutely imagine Netherlands just kind of holding off an early sort of they'll be pushed back early on with the Austrians all hopped up on fizzy drink. They'll really sort of flood over the Dutch in the beginning. But based on the France performance, I'm much more thinking Netherlands can hold on and wait that out, because the Austrians can only do it for so long, and then they've got some speedy boys on the counter, the Dutch, which they haven't always gotten their coordination right on the counterattacks when I've seen them, but the pace at least is there, the mobility is there. So I'm going into the tournament, you remember, I was really keen, you know, man, I don't like the look of the Dutch, I think Austria can nick second in this group. Having seen two Austria games and two Netherlands games, kind of think the Dutch are a little bit better than I thought. And I don't know if Austria can do this Ragnik thing for long enough. They definitely need to score in the periods when they are on top and doing the pressing thing. The goal needs to happen, because the Dutch absolutely can punish them. But it is, of course, all about England, at least where I am right now. And there is something about this England national team. They're no good right now, but they're currently no good in interesting and fascinating ways. Honestly, I could do an hour on England just now of things I'd like to say about this team. Not going to, but I could. And I actually think partly that is because I am at heart a massive contrarian, right? You guys know this about me. What really fires me up more than anything is hearing stuff I disagree with. That's when I get going. And I used to think that was a character flaw, but like over the years, I've just kind of made peace with it. It's just who I am. If I ever am really stuck and I don't have an idea for an episode of the pod, I'll just listen to a bunch of other podcasts and read articles, and I'll hear enough things that annoy me sufficiently that I can think of content to do my own own pod on. Never fails. Anyway, everyone here in this country has a take on England. It's crazy. And inevitably, there have been some bad ones. I've heard so many bad England takes and so many suggestions as to how to fix this team. Most of which I obviously disagree with because I'm me and it's kind of what I do. You know, sharks have to swim. I have to disagree with people. But it is probably why I find it tempting to do loads of England chat. But we did such a long England pod the other day. I'm going to hold it back. There'll probably be a fair amount of England chat tomorrow. I'll just say two things. Based on England's two games so far, for me, their two biggest problems are A, they struggle to keep possession and progress the ball well through midfield. It is a personnel issue, obviously, but I wasn't expecting it to be this bad. And B, they're starting to show signs of the classic England tournament anxiety. Those are the two things that really worry me. Those are the two big things. Like, all the other problems that people talk about, like, people are being angsty, oh, they should press more, and they should play at a higher tempo, and what's going on with Phil Foden, and Kane looks unfit. All those other things, they're problems, yeah, but they're not problems that are going to sink the whole tournament for England, I don't think. They're manageable problems. The two things I mentioned, unable to keep the ball well, starting to look anxious, those are the things that, for me, can really derail the whole tournament for England. Those really worry me. And they reinforce each other, right? The bad passing makes all the players more anxious, and then the fans start booing because they're not playing the sexy football the drunk fans in Germany want to see. And there's more anxiety, which leads to more bad passes, and it becomes like a really vicious cycle for them that seemed to just get worse and worse in the Denmark game. And then poor, like, Eber Eze, who has almost no experience at this level, comes on and is expected to fix everything. Really, I said it before, really missing Jack Grealish in that game, I have to say. Anyway, the big thing I'm looking for versus Slovenia, actually, really, is body language. And I can't believe I'm saying that, because I typically don't like when people in the media, such as myself, play amateur psychologists. It's not what we're trained for, if indeed we're trained for anything. But when it comes to England in big tournaments, it is such a big thing, because we've seen it so many times before. And the big question for me is, how did they spend the last couple of days? Are they relaxed and confident now? Have they taken their mind off all the stuff that's going on here in the country and what everyone's saying about them and all the opinions people are having? Because when I've seen people interviewed, Southgate and some players, seem kind of defensive. And I don't think that's a great sign. You know, Didier Deschamps was asked today, I think it was, about criticism of the team being boring. And he said, well, if people find it boring, they can change the channel, said Didier Deschamps. And I love that. I think that's the perfect attitude for him to adopt. Like, this is tournament football. They've done it this way before. They know that approach can work. There's no need to care or even engage with the criticism. It's a completely separate thing. It's part of the whole media circus. It's got nothing to do with Deschamps or the team or anyone. Let me tell you, Southgate is not saying that. Southgate has not said, if you don't like it, you can switch the channel. That is not something Southgate has said. It's like the line from Moneyball. So I'm quoting Moneyball a lot recently. It's a problem that you think we need to explain ourselves. It's a great line. And it was relating to something slightly different, but it also, yeah, if you believe in the way you're approaching this, if you believe in what you're doing as a coach and as a leader of this team, don't engage with the criticism, because you know what? If you win, they'll like you, and if you don't, it doesn't matter. Like, there's no point in doing the PR here. I think it would be better if you just kind of lead by example a little bit and almost, like, alienate them and just kind of be clear, say, listen, we're going to do what we do because that's what we do, and you can say whatever you want. Now, I don't expect England to play swashbuckling football against Slovenia. They'll go through no matter what. We know that now. They'll at the very least, if they lose, they'll finish third anyway. And they'll finish as one of the third place teams that go through. But what I'm looking for is if that tournament anxiety, the classic England summer yips, the hoodoo, the players suddenly not even trapping the ball properly, like Declan Rice kicking it off the field for no reason. You remember the Iceland game? I keep bringing it up, but like Harry Kane on corners, unable to connect properly with the ball, and like people just technically skillful players suddenly not doing simple things anymore because they're completely messed up in the head. There was a little bit of that against Denmark. It was starting to creep in, and that more than anything else worries me about England, and that's what I'm looking out for tomorrow. We'll no doubt discuss what we see against Slovenia tomorrow night. Also, tomorrow's episode may or may not be brought to you from a pub. I just feel I need to get out a bit more. Like, I need to sample some of the atmosphere here in London if I can make that work. Lastly, No Barella goal today. Not even a shot. So that was a swing and a miss from me. Not a curse, not bad luck, just a bad call by me. I accept full blame and embarrassment for that. For tomorrow, I was very tempted to go with Harry Kane. But, I mean, the odds aren't going to be great, are they? Even if their bets on boost them for us and he's not fully fit. So I don't love that. It does. I mean, the Slovenia, it does have like a deflected Harry Kane shot or dubious penalty scored by Kane. Or it has that kind of vibe, but it feels kind of dull to pick him. So instead, you know what? You know, they say that a burned child fears the fire or something, or is that just a Norwegian saying? Anyway, I have been a burned child and I am jumping straight back into the fireplace, my friends, because I am going with Antoine Griezmann. Because, I mean, Mbappe might be back. But I think Griezmann will continue to put himself into good positions, and if you continue getting those finishing chances he got, then the goal will come sooner or later. The polls will no doubt drop low, so we can see him getting in shooting positions around the box. We can see crosses being put in and him sort of pouncing on second balls in the box. He's always been good at that. Set pieces could be a thing, free kicks from around the box. So even if Mbappe is coming on, I think we'll have a kind of game where Griezmann, you know, the goal that should have come against the Dutch might come against the Poles. If France had 6 points, I'd worry about him getting rested, but they do not. They need to win, and they might need the goal difference here as well. So it might be in their interest to just keep attacking and keep scoring goals to the extent that a Didier Deschamps team ever does that. So you know what, Grizou, I trust you. Tomorrow, it might be a chaotic episode. There will likely be noise and bad audio quality. I might be in it, but we'll see. It's a risky move, but I want to spice things up a little bit here. Tomorrow, live from a pub. So if for no other reason, you should tune in to find out if that worked out at all and hear what tomorrow's podcast sounds like. Bye!